people at all levels of society, people of all positions in society, from the president down to the guy who pedals the bechuk, the little bicycle pedicab. These people believe in a spiritual world. They believe in the physical world, of course, but they believe just like the physical world, there is a spiritual world that's integrated, that's side by side with this world, that goes beyond it. And this is not a superstition, it's not a myth to them, it's just a simple fact. There is a spiritual world, just as we have human beings and animals, physical creatures, we have spiritual creatures too. And they have a strong belief in the value of pilgrimage to sacred sites, in the value of prayers at certain times, in auspicious and inauspicious days, in the whole sense of a cosmic order and organising our political activity and social activity to fit in with that cosmic order, not going against the flow. This dictates their whole life. You can't understand the activities of the president of Indonesia unless you accept he's a spiritual man. Spiritual in the sense of believing in spiritual realities.
You drive from Jakarta to Bandung. I remember there's one place near Bogor where we were always told to drive very carefully, because once there were an accident happening in that area, and the spirit of this woman who died too early was very angry and she always disturbed people. Most of the people who drove through that road, they always drive carefully.
People really cannot separate themselves from religion as their identity. It's unlikely to find an Indonesian who would say, I'm an atheist. It's going to be a problem for himself, not because he is going to be detained or to be arrested, but there's a great feeling of betrayal if you do this kind of thing. You are molded in this kind of environment where God is always present.
Gunawan Muhammad, who's the editor of Indonesia's leading weekly magazine, Tempo, and before him, Nani Pollard, who was born in Jakarta and now lives in Melbourne, and Greg Barton, who teaches Indonesian studies at Deakin University, speaking about a basic reality of Indonesian life, spirits, good and bad, spiritual realities. Jakarta, mother city of Indonesia, foster parent to those who come here from all over the country. Population, 8 million. A city unloved, says one. A vicious city, says another. The city of money and dreams. The stories of God we'll hear are, in a sense, stories from Jakarta. It's here that other basic realities like fashion and technology enter into Indonesian life. An ad in a Jakarta picture theatre. For some, a whole new way of life. There are other basic realities of Indonesian life on hand in Jakarta.
Setelah para cukong berkomplot dengan para tiran, setelah hak asasi di negara miskin ditekan demi kejayaan negara maju, bagaimanakah wajah kemanusiaan?
The poet and playwright Rendra being a bit critical of the government at a huge gathering of Muslims in Jakarta last year. It was very professionally done. A big night out of music, preaching, poetry and dance. A different face of Islam. 90% of Indonesia's 185 million put down Islam as their religion on their ID cards, which makes Indonesia the world's largest Muslim community.
It also illustrates an interesting phenomenon over the last 10 or 20 years of Indonesian society, which is that Indonesian society has become far more self-consciously Islamic. 20 years ago, if you went to Indonesia during Ramadan, during the fasting month of the Islamic calendar, you would find some people fasting, but you would find restaurants full of people going about the normal daily life as if nothing was taking place. Today, during Ramadan, it's a big thing. Many people fast. People who, even 5 years ago, wouldn't have fasted, today fast. You find women wearing the traditional head covering, or at least scarves of some form. You find people making a big thing out of Friday prayers, about making the Hajj and so forth. Indonesian society, for whatever reason, has become far more, at least ostensibly, far more Islamic.
But every time I go home, I always see, you know, something change. Well, first of all, of course, I look at my family because they are the closest. I, you know, like my sister and my brother-in-law, normally they don't pray five times a day. But every time I go home, there's always something changing, and now they are very devout Muslim. They pray five times a day, even in the office. They have their own company. So what they did is they have a special room in their office for them and for their employees to pray five times a day. Those sort of things I've never seen before. But I can see that most of my friends, I can say that, you know, 99% are changing.
Nani Pollard, who was a child, went to a Catholic school. Her friends in Jakarta now send their children to a Muslim school. I asked her, had she changed too?
Well, to tell you the truth, yes, I have been, you know, asking that question for quite some times. The other thing is that because I go home every year, you know, I'm always with my family, you know, every time I go home, and I can see, you know, what they are doing, what they were talking, and I listen. And of course I start also thinking, you know, what makes me feel not happy but contented and peaceful. So I think because of their influence, I also start praying.
صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين
Abina Mustafa leading a gathering of Muslims in prayer in his house. Rudy Waugh was there. He's a dancer and choreographer who's involved in the entertainment business in Jakarta. He was born in Holland and worked in various parts of Europe before coming to Indonesia 20 years ago.
I must say I was not really attracted, because I'm a very, very realistic man. Born in Holland and raised in Europe, I believe in what I see. And I personally don't tend to, how do you say that, just to follow somebody telling you something. Now, why I came by really accepting Islam as my religion, because it's easy, you can print it on your ID card, you can write it on it, it's no problem, anybody can do it. It's a commitment from you yourself, whether or not it's written on your ID. I came to this as I became, acquainted, with a man called Mustafa. And he was born in Jakarta, and now he has passed away a couple of years ago. Now, this man, from his education, from his parents, was a Muslim. He could explain, like nobody else could, all about God. Let's say it in a very normal way, all about God. I had this question in my heart. And then he was explaining to me and to other people, explaining about the backgrounds of it, about history. And without my question coming out of my mouth, he answered it.
Sebagaimana kejadiannya Tairan Ababil zaman Ibrahimul Khalil, kau lihat turunnya.
But you actually used to meet at Mr. Mustafa's house.
Yeah, he lived in East Jakarta, and I happened to live not far away from him. I came in the beginning a couple of times a week, once a week, twice a week. But like me, there were many other people who came, maybe not as a person or with his wife, but as small groups. They came to his house for talking, called advice, giving him some problems, if he could help them, etc., etc., from 7 o'clock in the morning until 4 o'clock at night. And on certain days, religious holidays, not only on Islamic religious holidays, also on Christian. We meet, pray together, and then mostly what you can say, a speech related to the event. For example, the event is Eid al-Adha, which is related to Abraham. Now, what happened in those days? What is actually the real essence of it? Is it just fast and month, don't eat, don't drink, don't, and that's it? And then at the end you can start eating like an animal. Try to really see into it. That was then a speech, very nice, and then sit together and talk, hang around, and talk nicely in a nice harmony. Like they say, where more than one people get together, he will be there. I mean, he, the God, God will be there.
But who was actually there? Was it drawn from a wide cross-section of Indonesian society?
Yes. Indonesian, from Java, Sumatra, Balinese, whatever. From the city, from countryside. Chinese people also. Foreign types people. I myself am a mixture. I don't look very much like an Indonesian, I think, right? Any. There's no status or... where do you come from, and what do you do, and how much money do you earn, or what religion? No way. No.
Jangan kau sentuh, kau bentak, kau hina. Bimbing dia sekalipun sekarang belum bisa, dia mesti turut kau.
Abina Mustafa established a foundation called the Foundation for Human Development in Jakarta. Gunawan Muhammad provides another view on what's happening to many Muslims at the moment.
Because we cannot take everything for granted. We tend to believe in God more. You live with this spiritual awareness of other lives all the time.
And that even includes the burgeoning middle class, say, in a city like Jakarta.
Yeah, more
so. With the videos from America and the nice houses and the cars and the whatever else.
I think the reason why they go back to religion or they embrace religion, they think they have to be grateful. There's a awareness of fate, of destiny. So you cannot see that your achievement is your own doing. It must be part of something, part of supreme design, which you never understand.
Fate is accepted very much.
Yes, because when you are used to life with a lot of uncertainties, you're prone to accept fate.
Fate, I suppose, led the poet and playwright Rendra on pilgrimage to Mecca last year. Greg Barton suggested earlier on that more Indonesians, President Suharto among them, are making the Hajj. In Rendra's case, for the first time.
It affected me deeply, and you might say basically also, everything was a surprise for me. I'm not prepared for revelations of so many spiritual experiences, Actually, I went there and I don't know why one must walk around the Kaaba 7 times, why must one walk from one hills to the other hills. What is the purpose? Why 7 times? Why there's no explanations in the Holy Quran? It's just that you go there, It's part of ibadah or liturgy. You have to do because it's God's will to do that. And also, when I go to Hajj pilgrimage, that's what I like, because we don't know why 7 times walk around Kaaba. I give meaning to it, I fill in. So it's a scenario of what I shall do, but the rest is improvisation of my consciousness, improvisation of my mind, improvisation of my senses, improvisation of my soul, improvisation of my intuitions. So it's beautiful. I was stoned. Although I didn't eat any drugs, but I stoned from beginning to the end,
Would it be true to say that this pilgrimage that you've undertaken and you're about to undertake another one would be a sign of the fact that you have of late, like a lot of Indonesians, developed a stronger Muslim identity?
That's what I wish. I mean, Muslim identity, I think, is that when you really do what God wants you to do. I really live my Islamic faith and I really live my Islamic duty. And also, the pleasure of having Islamic identity. you know, bodily pleasure, the gland, pleasure of the glands, pleasure of the senses, pleasure of the minds, pleasure of the spirit, pleasure of the instincts. You have to experience yourself. It's difficult to explain, but that's it. I can be addicted with this kind of Hajj pilgrimage, you know. I was stolen all the time, you know. I mean, total consciousness awakened, participated in the process of the pilgrimage. It's really, really, really exciting. Pleasure, excitement at the same time.
Ah, the inimitable Rendra on, well, the sensuality of the Hajj. He was telling me that when he spoke about the Hajj at the mass gatherings in Jakarta, Semarang, Surabaya and elsewhere, that many in the audience were nodding in agreement. Clearly something is afoot in the matter of Muslim identity, but why now?
I guess, like I said before, I don't know whether because I'm getting older or something inside me try to reach, you know, something which I didn't feel before.
There are a number of reasons. I think one reason is a genuine spiritual longing. People are looking for some meaning in life. That's one reason. The collapse of communism recently, and to some extent you could say the collapse of capitalism, the hard times that capitalism seems to be encountering, have removed those two points of view as being ideological bases. And the general morass of the West, the moral problems the West is facing, encourages people to look somewhere else for some answer. In the case of Indonesians, to look back to their own roots. The whole experience of moving beyond the colonial experience in the Islamic world, that period when people felt very self-conscious and very had a strong inferiority complex that made them rail against the West. We've moved beyond that now, and people are now far more self-confident and far happier with their Muslim identity. That's particularly the case in the Middle East and West Asia. But it's also the case in Indonesia, I believe. People are now coming to terms with the fact that they are a Muslim people. Perhaps they hadn't thought of themselves that way before, but now they are looking for roots of identity, things to hang on to, and Islam is one.
There are other religious traditions in Indonesia. Hinduism and Buddhism were there long centuries before, and Bali's a reminder of that. Christianity appeared among the Eastern Spice Islands not too long after Muslim traders came to northern Sumatra in the late 13th century. The 350-year Dutch rule reinforced the Christian presence.
Catholic missions was agent of modernization in Indonesia, and my father, a nationalist and love modernization for the country very much. So he became Catholic. Yeah. And he baptized me as Willy Brodus, you know, a saint from Germany, came to the south of Holland to teach the Dutch how to write, how to read, how to build bricks and to build houses from bricks, you know. And Javanese appreciate this kind of man because we have our characters and our calendar before the European has. My mother especially regards in Willy Brod very highly because he's the one who teach the Dutch how to read, how to write, how to compose poems, how to build bricks and houses, and how to teach them calendar.
Was it considered unusual to be a Catholic in Solo at that time? Were there other Catholic families about, so it wasn't altogether unusual? People could accommodate that?
Yeah, when I was a kid, it's rather difficult, but then it's all right, because then later on, the Catholic community in Indonesia can prove that they have the best hospital, they have the best school, they have the best banks, and so on. They have the best publication house. So.
At the same time, your father taught old Javanese and your mother was a Serimpi dancer. So they were very much involved with Javanese culture. You, of course, must have taken that in at the family table.
Yeah, yeah. It was a quarrel, very big quarrel with my mother's father and mother, you know. Eventually, they found a compromise, you know. My servant was given to my sister, and my grandfather gave me a servant who was actually also my guru. He taught me Javanese way of self-upbringing. That beside going to school, to Western school, learning logic and philosophy and other things.
When people talk of the Javanese mix of religious traditions, you're a living representative of that Javanese mix.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true. Yeah, it's true. Because since I was a kid, I'm familiar with Aristotelian way of thinking, but also Javanese way of thinking. You might say Platonic way, you know. To me, each other is complementing, not conflicting, you know. But to my father, yes. My father told me that it is conflicting, this kind of idea. So he sided with Western way. And he always wonders why Javanese way and Western way can get along beautifully and me. And I told him, it's naturally. I said, oh.
What did he say when you became a Muslim?
Well, in the beginning he was sad and even fallen ill, you know. My mother told me, your father might die because you become Muslims. But I told her, no, life and death is in the hand of God. If God doesn't want him to die, he's not going to die. And he has strong faith. So he understands and he experienced what faith is. Now, I think he will understand also my faith, because my faith is also strong. Eventually, my father, hearing this, a few days later, no longer ill, and yeah, he can accept it.
Rendra became a Muslim in 1970. It's not uncommon for there to be a Muslim, a Catholic, and a Protestant in a Javanese family. There's another element on the Indonesian religious spectrum, and that's custom. In Java, custom, adat, is alive and well.
That adat tradition represents, to some extent, the Hindu-Buddhist society that pre-existed Islam, but it goes way back beyond that to the animist roots. And even in areas that are strongly Islamic, for example, West Sumatra is strongly Islamic, so is Aceh. In these areas, adat tradition is still very mystical and you could say superstitious, but certainly pre-Islamic, and it's still very strong.
There's a very old saying, it's repeated in all the guidebooks, that religion came in from the sea and adat came down from the mountains.
Yes, well, that represents that very general view that Islam came through maritime trading communities and adat came from the pre-existing, often interior-focused communities. For example, in Java, where this is most true, the kingdoms of the interior, the great Javanese kingdoms, were, if not in the mountains, certainly focused on the interior of the island. Islam came from the coast.
Nani Pollard was telling me how difficult it was to separate custom and religion.
The next day I went to see a doctor and I told my doctor, I said, I'm a bit worried. And I told him about this ceremony and, well, the doctor being Australian and being Catholic, he just said, oh, don't worry. And then I said to him, look, I am worried because of that. And secondly, I said, if I give birth, and if the navel of the child get off in the hospital, I like to have it because according to our custom, we have to keep it. And also, I said, don't throw away the placenta. Give it back to my husband. And the doctor just looked at me thinking I was, you know, insane. I said, I know what you're thinking. But I said, this is my custom. And he apologized. He said, look, I've never had a patient, you know, telling me to keep the placenta and to keep the navel of the child when it's off. You know, when I give birth, he gave the placenta in a plastic bag to my husband saying, you know, this is your takeaway. And of course my husband laughed, but he took it home and my mother was at home and what she did is she washed the placenta She said to me that, you know, during washing the placenta, she got something out, and from there she will know whether I could have more children or not. And what amazing is, she said, if you got one more, that will be, you know, a surprising, because according to her that, you know, you could only have one. And then what she did is she washed the placenta with 7 type of flowers again and tamarind, and put it in a jug and, you know, close the jug and wrap it in a white cloth, and it has to be buried somewhere in the backyard. I think we live in Australia. I was, you know, telling my mom at that time before I gave birth, I said, it will be difficult to bury in the backyard, because I said the dog might, you know, go through it. Well, she said, in Indonesia what we did is we put a candle and we lit the candle for 40 days, because the Indonesian believes that the placenta is the brother or sister of the baby. So we have to respect the placenta. We have to bury them with the ceremony, we have to wash them and things like that. I'm not sure whether the Muslim accepted that or not.
The Wayang Theatre belongs to everyone. Stories of good and evil enacted by puppets. We're probably more familiar with the shadow puppets, and presided over by a master storyteller, the Dalang. In the main, the stories come from the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, the great Hindu epics. They're the two other holy books of Java, according to one writer, and their stories are part of everyday life.
So those stories from the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, they're a part of the Javanese child's life from very early on.
Oh, definitely, yes. When I was a kid, I used to believe that heroes like Bhima and Hanuman used to live in Java. I was told that in the Milky Way, you could see how Bhima is fighting the serpent. It was reflected in the Milky Way. I always tried at the time to discern the image. Of course, I never made it, but I still believe that. When I was following my family running away from the Dutch troops, we crossed this river called Serayu River in the Banyumas area in the southern part of Java. And according to the story, it was there that Bhima killed the serpent. And I was kind of excited to cross that river.
And there was no confusion for a child growing up with the name Muhammad as a Muslim, no, who knew, was excited by and delighted by stories from the Ramayana and the Mahabharata.
I don't think so. I don't think it's just come naturally. It's part of your life. People keep telling you that.
Was the Wayang Theatre part of your life as a child?
Yes. It was performed everywhere, and you could listen to the radio. It was just beautiful. You cannot escape liking that.
Can you see Wayang in Jakarta? There's much of it. Is it on television, for instance?
Yes, in the television also, but there are also in the comic books, very popular comic books on Wayang. It's well done, I mean, as far as the storyline and the authenticity of the story and the dialogue. And also, many Javanese who live in Jakarta and become rich, they asked Dalang from Central Java to perform in Jakarta. Almost every Saturday night, there's a Wayang performance in the radio, in several private radios, and maybe also in the state radio.
Gunawan Muhammad. Wayang is a vivid reminder of the variousness of Javanese life.
It is. I guess it suggests to us that when Islam came, it didn't come as a total other, as something opposing existing tradition. Because it came primarily as a mystical tradition, it was able to accommodate and to live side by side with pre-existing tradition. That's the case even in the Middle East, certainly the case in West Asia, certainly the case in South Asia. Islam didn't wipe out every pre-existing belief. It often incorporated them, particularly in the Sufi tradition.
It was this mystical tradition of Islam which found its way to Indonesia. Gunawan Muhammad, editor of Tempo but also a poet, was fascinated by the various mystical traditions alive in his village in north central Java.
It's always of interest to me. I think maybe poetry has something to do with this, because I don't think you can write poetry by listening to other voice. I mean, by listening to other things imposed from outside. And by writing poetry, you really appreciate the beauty. The name of God, one of the names of our God is beauty.
You're quoting from somewhere? Or
yes, Islam. One of the names of... There are several names of God, but one of them is beauty. And most Muslims forget that. Most Muslims think religion is just a judicial or prescriptive kind of institution. And so the other side of God is forgotten. The other side which gives you freedom and faith and hope.
That other side of God is what Sufis through the ages have sought.
The Sufi teaching that had come through India and itself had been influenced by West Asia, by Persia and elsewhere, mixed with local mystical belief based on animism, then Hinduism and Buddhism, and this all mixed together. And people's view of the cosmos, their spiritual worldview, was a mixture of all these elements.
Now, that mix of elements is still very much alive today, I'm told.
Yes, that's certainly true. There's no reason for it to change. There's no reason why it should just fade away with the course of history. It should be borne in mind to bring things into perspective that probably 90%, I'm just guessing, but this is a rough figure, perhaps you could say 90% of Muslims around the world practiced a kind of Islam which is based upon some sort of personal experience, some sort of devotional life, which is not entirely orthodox or is not entirely set down by orthodox tenets. What I mean by that is there is a kind of a folk Islam which believes, just as the Quran speaks of angels and spiritual beings, it believes in these things, but even further, it has integrated local pre-Islamic beliefs into that belief structure. And therefore, sometimes certain things are done to ward off spirits, certain amulets are worn, certain practices, certain prayers are said. Now, these things strictly are not Islamic according to the book definition, but this represents the majority of the Islamic world, and most Muslims have some sorts of belief to some such extent.
Is there a tension, though, between those on the one hand who are Orthodox, who would regard themselves as being Orthodox Muslims, and the Javanese variant of Islam?
Yes, and this tension didn't really come to the fore until quite recently. About 100 years ago, with the rise of what's called modernism, particularly in Egypt, particularly with Muhammad Abdul, and the way in which this strand of thought was brought back to Indonesia through pilgrims returning from the Hajj, from the Holy Land, this modernism, on one hand, was progressive. It presented a face of acceptance to ideas of modernity, which by definition then were Western ideas, as well as representing a Puritan trend, a return to the Quran, return to the Sunnah of the Prophet, the way of the Prophet, the tradition of the Prophet, a return to a pure Islam that threw away all the cultural accretions of the ages, all the superstition and all the so-called magic and mysticism. And this modernism is the strand or the tradition in 20th century Indonesia which has most opposed syncretic and mystical Islam in Indonesia. But even this strand, this modernist strand, has undergone a lot of change. And we talked earlier about a liberal progressive movement, where there has been a liberal progressive movement which has come out of this very modernist tradition, which is more embracing of a spiritual life, more embracing of a mystical, Sufistic, if you like, life, and more embracing of other religious points of view.
Rudy Wawa was not interested in the mystical traditions of Java. There's God, the prophets, and the book. But he accepts the reality of mystical experience. And when I suggested to him that his forthcoming music theatre production about religion could do with a dash of mysticism, a touch of the exotic perhaps, if it were to win us in the West, He said no, the theme would carry it.
We are working now on putting together, working out the concept of putting a stage performance, theater, dance, you know, something like that, that has to do with religion. Now, I'm not talking about a thing like the musical Jesus Christ Superstar, right? No. Let's say another dimension. I don't want to say a deeper dimension. I don't want to sound big-headed. But another dimension of a certain segment of religion. I say religion, and then I mean of religion. Anything that has to be, that was before, is all religion. I only see one religion. Anybody that believes in God, I see it as a friend, as a brother. And so I can accept any religion. Now, to put all the essences of these religions in a stage form, to bring it out, and not to tell people, hey, you out there, you have to be like this, this, this. It's not to me to say that. It has done before. And the people in the churches do it, and in the mosques do it. And I think they do as good as they can. But to bring out in this production a vision all about God. And that is what we are working on now.
A vision of God as the essence of all religions is an example of the syncretic impulse with a difference. And toleration of other religions remains part of the political reality in Indonesia, enshrined in the 5 founding principles of the Republic, called Pancasila.
It does encapsulate that concept that Indonesian society is based on a belief in God. It's a theistic society, but it's not an Islamic society, it's not a Christian society, it's not a Hindu-Buddhist society, it's a theistic society. What form of theism you have is up to the individual. It makes it hard if you're not theistic, of course, but it has that openness, that plurality about it. An abiding concern in Rendra's poetry has been a concern for the marginalised. It's a reminder that another reality of Indonesian life, and in particular life in Jakarta, is the marginalised. Another basic reality, and other stories of God from Indonesia. My thanks to Greg Barton, Nani Pollard, W.S. Rendra, Rudy Wawa, and Gunawan Mohammed. Technical production, Neil Hobbs. I'm Damien Coleridge.